Hey, this is Ricky Rocket from Poison, and you're listening to KXRW 99.9 FM.
The Columbian in Southwest Washington continues to offer the most comprehensive and consistent coverage of our region and our people, despite the challenges faced by local newspapers nationwide. Valued donations to our community-funded journalism project via the Local Media Foundation pays for local reporters to provide expanded and in-depth coverage of key local issues in print and online, including homelessness, transportation, and the environment. For the most thorough daily coverage, visit Columbian.com. Please consider donating or subscribing today.
If you're looking for pizza in East Vancouver, consider visiting Giuliano's Pizzeria in the Cascade Park Fisher's Landing neighborhood. For 37 years, Giuliano's has been a choice for Clark County residents. Giuliano's has a casual classic rock atmosphere, open 7 days a week, and they provide table service allowing you to relax and enjoy your meal with family and friends. If you have a large crowd to feed, Giuliano's can deliver six or more extra large pizzas to your office or event. More information can be found at giulianospizza.com.
This is Hassling the Paranormal. I'm your host, Jason Hassler. I'm the director of Big River Paranormal, the Oregon team for the Atlantic Paranormal Society. I've been obsessed with the paranormal since having unexplained experiences as a child. These experiences left me with more questions than answers. Join me as we explore all things paranormal with some of the top specialists and experts in the paranormal community. Welcome to Hassling the Paranormal. I'm your host, Jason Hassler. Today's guest is Mel Scahan, Yakima Nation Elder. How are you today, Mel?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
So you spent time as a forestry tech, which led you to some experiences you are here today to share. As a forestry tech, what exactly was your role?
Throughout my career, I started with the Forest Service. I was with a pre-sales group, would go out and measure timber. I was with the silviculture group, going out finding in diseases and insects for trees. I was a wildland firefighter, which took me to some very remote places. And then when I was working for the Yakima Nation, I was a log scaler. And then I was also a timber cruiser for 25 years, if I remember right. And so I would be getting assignments that were either close to the lowland agriculture areas of the Yakima Valley, or I would be up on the slopes of Mount Adams or the Goat Rocks.
Okay. So that's prime Sasquatch area. Anybody knows, the Pacific Northwest. So going into the forestry stuff, what was your preconceived ideas about Sasquatch? Did you have any going in?
No, I didn't. I mean, I'd heard stories growing up, and the stories were scary because I was a little kid at the time hearing them, and never knew what they looked like, never knew how big they actually were or had gotten. And so finding something or something finding you was just like an ordinary encounter with a bear, with a elk, with a cougar. And then once you see them, then it takes a lot out of you.
So as far as like the Yakima Nation stories that you heard growing up as a kid, what was their take on, is Bigfoot a spiritual being or more of like a physical being, like a hairy ape-like creature walking around in the forest?
It just depended on who you talk to. They covered both, and I only knew him as a physical being because of the stories. And then, as I got further into it and talking to more people on the reservation, then you started getting into the spiritual and some stories of having them being a back. Or excuse, having them being a bad look to view them. And so that hearing that for the first time, that really scared me
I
because
bet.
I didn't know, what was going to happen if I did come across them.
So you basically thought if you did see one, it wasn't going to be a good
Yes,
thing.
yeah, true, true. And I did a few investigations where on the reservation because I collected over 1,000 stories on the reservation as I continued on with this and talked to lots of elders and lots of forestry workers, loggers, even recreation people out in the woods that were out just fishing and wood cutting and all that. And some of the stories of they told me were really bizarre, and but their take as being a bad luck thing also harmed them more because they didn't want to talk about it, and they didn't know what was going to happen after an encounter.
Do you have a particular story that you were told that stuck out to you?
There are a couple, and the one that really hit home was a fire lookout, and she was brand new, had just taken the job as a summer job, and we had multiple lookouts on the Yakima Reservation, and it narrowed down to two. The lady took the job with not knowing who they were, their capabilities, what to hear, what to smell, what to, nothing about it. But her family kept telling her, "You're going to see Bigfoot. You're going to see Bigfoot." And so, being a lookout in a fire tower meant that she had to spend almost a whole week up there with minimal items. She had a cabin, but they had to bring her water up for her and limited electricity and also no vehicle. So they didn't want them taking off. Their job was to be there on site 24/7. So it didn't bother her. She would get the visitors coming up every day, and over the course of the summer, she started smelling things outside the cabin that she lived in, and didn't know what it was. And then she would have other fire management folks come up to deliver water and make sure that she had fresh batteries for her radio and everything. And it wasn't until then that she started sharing stories of the smells and the sounds that she was experiencing while up there. She could, with the binoculars and everything that she had, she could see all the activity down in the lower Yakima Valley. But when it come time to go to bed, the smells, the whoops, the howls, she didn't really mention anything like the samurai chatter, I guess. But it was always constant, the smells at night, because she slept with her window open. And when the same person would come up and check on her every day, she started telling stories. And so of that night's happenings, or that couple of days, depending on when they would come up, and then they would walk around the cabin, and then they started seeing the tracks. And so she made the comment one time that I would like to see the big man with the with those big feet. And so she had a communication with them that was, like I said, it was hard to believe at the time, but they were connected. And so a couple of times she'd gone down, she told the forestry worker, you know, the grass and the weeds and stuff are getting pretty tall around here. Could you guys take care of that? And she'd go down for her weekend and then come back up. And the grass and the weeds have been pulled, and they've been put out near the front door of the cabin. And she goes, oh, well, thank you guys for doing this. And they go, we didn't do this.
Oh, wow.
And so it's those, you know, when people want to know about communication, this happened like 20 years ago. Yeah. And this was well before, you know, I got into that type of communication where they could read your thoughts. They're with you all the time now. Once you're around them and they know who you are, they had pure heart. I mean, she wasn't up there to hunt. She wasn't up there to anything else other than work. The day of the event that happened was, she had smelled them. She had heard them. She heard the screams. She heard the howls. And she woke up that one morning, and she would put an apple on, there's two doors, one facing to the south and the other one facing to the east. So she would always put an apple on the eastern door on the porch, and the apple would be gone. So she had an elk there that she saw from the tower. And so she heard footsteps outside on the gravel. So, and then it went from the front door over from the south, walking over towards the east. And then she goes, well, this elk had scared me one time, so I'm going to get him back. And so she had the blinds down, and then went over to the window where she heard the footsteps, and then popped open the blinds, and standing right there within 20 feet of her was a 10-foot male forest person. Wow. And she said she was nailed to the floor and couldn't move, couldn't scream. And so they just stared at each other. And we got the height from the tree that is outside the cabin. She pointed on a picture that we took where the head was at. So that's how we came up with the measurement, just right around, just a smidge under 10 feet. And so he was looking up at the tower at the time. And so when she opened the blinds, then the focus went on to her. So he was looking up, then he opened the blinds, saw the movement. And then that's when she was just staring at him. And then she tried to run. She tried to scream. She tried to do something. She just nailed to the floor. And so after a while, he raised his right arm and he made this wah, wah sound. And then he turned to his left, and then he started walking away from him. And in our investigation, we found out that we were only finding 1 foot impression in the ground. And so we couldn't figure it out what was going on. And so in her relaying to us, she asked if we noticed the problem in the way he walked, because he was dragging, he wasn't putting pressure on his right foot.
Huh.
So you would find a clear left, and then he would drag his right and slightly place it, and so that's why we were only finding one side during our investigation. And we followed him to the east, and that's when he jumped off a 20-foot tall, about 70% to 80% rock face, and then landed, and then created this these divots in the ground, these slide marks in the ground, and then he went off to the north after that, and then that's when we decided that was enough. But what she didn't know was that there was a family coming around. She was only seeing the one track. And so the track that we measured was right around 20 inches in length.
Oh, wow. That's pretty big.
And then the female, the mother, had an 18-inch track. And then the little one had a 12 or a 13-inch track. And she didn't see those two. She only saw the one leaving, because when it turned to walk away, then that's when she didn't feel nailed to the floor anymore, and then went running into one of the other rooms. And so, you know, the people, you know, that's how people develop the relationships with these forest peoples, is, you know, gaining their trust. And so to have that type of, you know, the communication that they were sharing, the whoops, the the loud screams, and then having that as I brought up, you know, saying to another person, could you guys pull my weeds and pull my grass, and then coming back, and then they were the ones that did it for her.
Huh. So. Was she, how long did she have to stay there by herself after she saw the Bigfoot and then had to, before somebody came and check on her?
It was a couple of hours after the event had happened, because she went back out to grab the radio because she heard a helicopter that does the flyover every morning. So she got a hold of them. They came in and landed, on the landing pad there on top of by the cabin, and then they went up and checked on her, and then they told her she told them the story and everything, and then by that time word had gotten out, and they sent more people up there, so they were able to fly her off to get her away from there. She was afraid at first, but then realized, you know, everything was going to be okay. And so she had been off for at least 3 or 4 days, and they said that she was pretty much well done, if I remember right. They weren't going to send her back up there, but she was like, no, I want to go back up. But they never allowed it.
Were they did they believe her story right away, or were they thinking maybe she had maybe it was a bear or something, maybe she just misidentified something, or
oh, no, they saw the tracks. They saw the tracks in the dirt in from the direction that had gone after it left the gravel road and then hit the dirt. Then they believed her.
I'm not sure I'd want to go back up there by myself again after that one.
Yeah,
she's way braver than me, that's for sure. I mean, I go up there, but not by myself. I know that.
right. Yeah. When you first get into this, you will be afraid to go back out there. It'll take some callousing of your mind and everything else to go right back out. And it's like, okay, this is not going to happen again.
So tell me about your first encounter with Sasquatch.
My first encounter was north of there by about 10 miles. And I was working a timber sale, or I was working an allotment, 160 acres, and I was putting I was measuring the timber in the area, and it wasn't quite winter yet. The first snows were, happening, but everything was melting off. And then, so I take it off from the truck, and I had to cross this creek, and I was working this area lodgepole stand, which was really thick, not fat, wide timber, but just a lot of narrow sticks. And so I crossed the creek, and when I was going south, I had heard this and I immediately thought, there's a bear in the darkness over there, over to my right. And so I went to work, measured all my trees, and then I picked up to go to the next plot. And then as I was walking to the next plot, then it did it again. But this time it went, when it did that loud, there was electricity associated with it, or infrasound. And it hit me, and it went right through me. And I put my hands up, and I was like, wow, that's not a bear. That's not a bear. And so I went about looking around, and I couldn't see through there. So I dropped to the ground on my stomach, and I started looking. And I still couldn't see anything. It was so thick, and it was so dark over there. So very cautiously, I went through, started measuring the trees. No sounds, and then picked everything up and started going to the next plot. And then as soon as I got to the next plot, and I was like, okay, that's it. That's enough. You know, I put my hands up in the air like I had read in a couple of books, and I told them, I says, okay, this is your area. I'm leaving, and I won't be back for a while. And I didn't go straight back to the truck, which was north of me. I took the long way around. I went up over a ridge and then out of the area and then out into the open spots, because I'd worked that spot already. So I knew where to go to remain in the open. And then I did a half circle back to my truck. And as soon as I got to my truck, there was this crash, crash, bang. Tree had been pushed over, and I put my hands up in the air, guess I'm out of here. I'm not coming back for a while.
Like, so, I get it.
So that was my very first encounter with them.
When you were out working in the woods, were you armed, you know, in case you ran into, you know, like cougar, a bear, or anything like that?
No. We weren't allowed to take any firearms with us. We were allowed bear spray, but I don't want anything getting that close to me. The wind's the wrong direction, you're going to get it.
Yeah. I don't think I'd want to be out in the woods, especially by myself unarmed. I just don't think I would be willing to do that.
Even
not even counting the Sasquatch stuff, but like the bears and the cougars and who knows what else you're going to run into up there.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, if you you face them and you watch them and you don't show any fear or anything like that towards them, you talk to them. I always talked to them when they came up, walking up towards me, and then they just stare at me and it's like, all right, this guy's not scared. So, you know, I'm just going to lumber away and continue on my looking for grubs or, you know, whatever they were doing.
They'd be laughing at me because I'd run like hell.
Yeah, I learned that lesson once with a coworker, where I was ahead of him, and then I saw these two bear cubs running up the hillside towards us. And then I saw mom just walking. And then I went running back to my coworker, and I said, there's two bear cubs and a mom coming right at us. And then as soon as I said that, we heard the cubs go up in the trees. And it's like, oh, no, it's going to be one man, mom. And so we started walking back slowly, keeping our eye where they were at. And then mom popped up and then just stared at us. So we put our hands up and started walking backwards.
How often did you have experiences with Bigfoot when you were out in the woods?
Oh, geez. I had hundreds of experiences with them. With the vocalizations, I would hear the long howls, the whoa, or you'd hear the whooping. And sometimes they were alone. And then other times there was multiple of them, because you would hear a whoop in one direction, then you would hear whoops going on, or in, not necessarily near us, but you could hear the whooping going on in the area. And then, you know, the wood knocks, a single wood knock. And the strangest event that had happened with wood knocking was when we were working up on the northern slopes of Mount Adams. And we just constantly heard this bam, 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 bam. And we were there for about 45 minutes, and it did it the whole time. Bam, 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 bam. And then so we finished up our plot, and then we walked back to the truck. And even while we were driving out, bam, 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 bam. So put your hands up again, said, we're out of here. This area is yours. So, and then, you know, like I said, the multiple, and then, you know, being followed by them, they're not very stealthy when they're following you. They'll be loud, and which is a good thing. And you may be hearing the one, but you don't know about the other ones that might be in the area as well. And so my coworkers, when they would work with me, they would hear those sounds. They would hear the whoops, the wood dogs, and they were like, what is that? And I said, don't worry about it. They'll be with us all day, so don't worry about it. And try to ease their minds about the whole situation, because I already had multiple experiences with them, you know, following me and then, you know, not coming in close to me, but keeping their distance. And so I told them, you're going to be fine. They're just curious. And just tell them who you are, why you're here, and then just continue on with the job.
Were you fearful, or did you get over that pretty quick?
After 20, 30 of them, then I got over the fear pretty quick, because again, you know, when I go out, I announce who I am, why I'm there. And then, you know, that's when it kept, I never had a bluff charge or any type of negativity from them, but except for one time. And that's when a coworker, my final coworker, she worked with me, and they told her, said, Mel's going to use you for bait, so watch out. So awesome. She'd work with me, and then we had to go do an inspection of a creek or a some water bubbling out of the ground. And so we had to go check out this little stream that it created. And so we had to go find this spring. And so took my compass shot and we started walking. And then she was anywhere from 100 to 150 feet behind me as we were going up. And she was just taking her time. And so as we were getting closer to this spot, I just started feeling nauseous and terrible. And I was like, what is going on here? I says, I've never had this happen before. And as we kept going up further and further up this hillside, it just got stronger. And it got to the point where everything was heavy on me and my breathing was different. My heartbeat was racing and I wasn't scared or anything. It was just, what is going on here? And then I realized this is infrasound. They don't want us here. So I had to tell them, I said, I'm only here to find this spring. And then I said, it's to your benefit that I find this spring, because then that means we have to protect this spot. So that's why I'm here. I'm here to protect this spot for you guys. And so as I'm talking in my head out to them, my coworker catches up to me and she goes, what's going on out here? I go, what are you talking about? She goes, I don't feel good. I go, I'm feeling like my pack is like 200 pounds and my head's pounding. And I was like, we're almost there. And I'll let you know what's going on when we get back. She goes, I think we should turn around because I don't feel good. I says, well, if we turn around, go back, then we have to make that walk all the way back up here again. So we continued on. We found the spring. We ribboned it out, and we put it on the map. And then we started walking out. And then as we were leaving, I told him, I says, well, we found it. We're leaving. And so you can have your area back. And the further we got away from that spot, then the infrasound got not as intense. And then I told her what was going on. She goes, that's the first time I've ever felt that. I said, pretty much the length of that had happened. I said, that's the first time that they've ever done that to me too.
Huh. What is your take on these TV shows like Finding Bigfoot, Expedition Bigfoot, that kind of stuff that pretty much encourages people to go out into the woods and look for Sasquatch and that kind of thing?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my thought on the shows is that, you know, it's all TV. It's all, you know, they've got to, you know, find a storyline every time that they go out. And so, you know, the wood knocking, the whooping, the calling out and everything, that's not going to work because they already know that you're going to make that trip out there. And so they're expecting you. And if you're out there going to try to find them, then they're not going to present themselves. But if you're going out there like me, that was working forestry, they already knew I was coming to the spot. They were just waiting for me. And then the vocalizations is what gave them away. And as I continue to work, I just let them know, you know, I'm not here to bother you. So if you continue along that sense, then your probability of them coming closer to you is increasing rather than trying to go out and basically harass them.
So your belief is they can sense your intention and then hear, like, you could speak to them through your thoughts.
That's what I eventually learned from a couple of people that when I would take them out to an area, they was like, yeah, they already know we're coming. And I'm talking about intuitive people that sense them from a long distance that have this type of communication. You don't even have to tell them the spot you're going. I'm talking about the intuitive people. And they say, yep, they already know we're coming.
So you said sometimes they are alone and sometimes they're with families. Do some of them choose to live alone, or is it just they're out by themselves and they have families elsewhere, or kind of like humans do, I guess? Or
they have their high altitude, higher ground placements of their sentinels that are watching, and they can hear better. Because if you're out in the woods and you're working by yourself and you know there's a road in the distance, you could hear the vehicles going by. You can even hear the vehicles coming up the road that you're on. So that's, you know, having that high ground gives them that sense. It's like, okay, they're almost here. They don't let the other ones know. So, you know, traveling in groups or family units is more likely how they're living.
What advice would you give to someone that wants to have an experience?
Be true to yourself. You know, if you're going to go out and try to prove them to people, you're not. You've got to prove it. You got to have it in your heart to want to be out there with them. Show them your pure heart and that you mean no harm, and that will get you closer to them, rather than going out and trying to collect evidence to show everybody that they exist.
Would you say the majority of the videos and evidence that you see on the internet and TV and stuff, would you say the majority of that is real or faked?
During my investigations, when I get shown pictures and everything, I have to take a really close look at it. I got to look at the stride. Like, did you take any measurements? Did you do any? And if you hadn't, then I always like the witnesses to take me out to the location. That I get a better sense of being on the ground to be able to determine. Oh, I had some coworkers call me up one time and says, "Oh, we found some tracks." And they called me at my desk. I said, "Okay, well, let me clock out and I'll be right up." And so I went up and then found their location. And so I got out of the truck. They told me their story, what they found. And then I got on the ground and started looking. And then I was like, well, I can't really see anything here. So I started tracking it. And as I tracked it into the timber, into this shallow or not a deeper soft dirt, then they realized it was a double step bear that they had come across.
Well, at least you were able to come up with a logical, you know, hey, this is what it actually was.
Yeah. And so that's why I said, you know, pictures, you know, with a lot of the stuff out there, I mean, people running around out of focus, into the trees, moving the camera around, you know, you really can't tell what's going on there.
Yeah. For me, like, you know, of course, if you did see something, you'd be alarmed and like, you're probably not going to take your best picture, which is probably why a lot of the pictures up there are blurry, you know, what's your take? I mean, I know there's been some recent controversy on the Patterson-Gimlin film. What's your take on that?
Yeah. You know, I'm really good. I'm a son to Bob and Judy Gimlin. And I've known of them for almost 25, almost 30 years now. And, you know, it's not the first time that this has happened. You know, he's talked about multiple times where people have tried to debunk and say it's a hoax. And, you know, they get through it. And Bob's always been true to his word that, you know, what I saw was an actual forest person, or he called it creature at the time. Yeah. He'd never seen one. And then when I would go to conferences or be at the house and people would come over and you know, we'd tell stories and everything, it was always the same. Nothing ever deviated. And so this new one, this capturing Bigfoot, is just another bump on the road for him.
Yeah. He's in his 90s now, isn't he?
Yes. Yep. He's almost in his mid-90s now. Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. I just saw him a couple of weeks ago and he's doing fine.
Oh, that's good to hear. Why do you think that pictures of Sasquatch are blurry? Do you think it's just because people are out of focus and afraid and freaking out? Or do you think they're doing it because it's mostly faking stuff?
Well, when you got something on autofocus, and you know, the first thing that it's going to pick up on is the surrounding area. And then when you add a moving thing and you're trying to take a photo of a moving object that and your lens is focused on the timber and they start snapping pictures, that's mainly the reason why you're going to get blurry pictures. Unless it's standing out in the open and you got a clear, you know, more than 10 seconds, be able to bring your camera up and take a shot.
What would you say is the best evidence collected?
Well, I mean, Meldrum was pretty good with the foot tracks. The Patterson-Gimlin film, it was really good after the stabilization and everything. And then digital and enhancing, people have been working on it. And then, you know, to be able to identify the communication that Ron Moorhead has done. I mean, there's so much out there. Yep. And so, you know, there's a lot of good stuff out there, but then there's a lot of fake stuff too. So, you know, you just got to trust the generation before us, the Gimlins, you know, the Moorheads, and their accuracy of what they've done over the years.
Yeah, I've had Ron on the show before. It's just an interesting story, and the sounds that they recorded, I would be so scared to hear that out in the woods, but you know, and it's not like they can just leave. He said they were like miles in, you know, on horseback and whatnot. They can't just leave. I don't know if I could hang out there and listen and then go back and try to find it again.
Yeah.
Those guys are brave.
Yeah, they were. And being on horseback or long walks in, not being able just to jump in the car and take off, and get out of the
Yeah.
area. And but you know I had two events that happened to me with sounds with the what Moore had recorded. And I was out alone. My wife, we were going to a camping, a new camping area. I got off before she did, so I was doing some reconning up in central Washington, and so she was going to come up after work after I went back into cell range. So I arrive at this location, and I'm sitting in my car, and I got all the windows open, my sunroof open, and I'm laid back and was giving myself time before I went out and started setting camp up. And then as I'm sitting in the truck, I hear footsteps, and so deer, elk, anything. And so I started listening to tuning in to what was there. And then next thing you know, I hear this, and I'm like, oh no, it's you. And this is a new spot. And there was, as far as I know, there was nobody else n near me for a couple of miles. And I'm laying there and I hear, and I was like, okay, I could tell that they were coming my direction by the footstep. And then I hear in a different pitch, and I'm like, oh, there's two of them. And they're just yakking back and forth with each other, walking towards me, snap, 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 blah, 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 blah. And then so quiet up there that I could hear a car coming, driving up the road to my location where I'm at. And then so they diverted from me, and then they started walking to the east. They were headed south towards me, and then they diverted to the east. And you could tell that they changed direction by the voices, because it was not directed down towards me, walking towards me, but they were talking, going to the east. And they were just snapping away, walking, walking. So I get out of my car, and then I walk up to the main road, and I started following them behind them. And this is about 9:30, somewhere around there. It was dark. Yeah, so I had no light. All I had in my hand was my keys. And so I started following them, and I could just hear them just yapping away with each other. And it's like, these things are supposed to be stealthy and quiet, and these two are not. And so they're walking and talking and walking and talking. So, and the car gets closer, and then it stops. And I'm So I could hear the car that they're walking towards, and then they were still yakking until the car stopped. And then I'm coming up behind them below them on the road. And then they went from loud voices to and then the two guys get out of the car, and I could hear them both talking to each other. I said, we're almost there. They're just talking. And then these two forest guys, I call them teenagers by the way they acted. They're just whispering back and forth to each other while the two didn't even know that they were there, and they didn't even know I was on the road. And so then they got in the car, and then they took off up on a different road. And so as soon as they left, those two just started going. Then they went back to their regular voices. And I was like, I've never heard them ever, for one, talk as loud to each other and then go to a whisper when people were around, and then go back up to raising their voices once they knew the humans were gone. And so then he started walking back to the west towards me, and I was like, oh, I got to get out of here. So I started walking on the gravel road back to my car. Then they were coming up behind me. Snap, 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 step, step, step. And then I scuffed the road with my foot, and then they got quiet. And then I was like, I got to stop. So I stood there in silence. And then, and then they started walking again. It's like, I got to start going. I got to pick up my pace. And then I did it again. I scuffed the road. And then they got quiet again. So I had to stop. Silence. Gave me a few seconds. And then they started walking and talking again. I was like, oh, I'm almost to my car. So I get down, turn down towards my car. I get inside and I can hear them still walking towards me. And so I was like, my wife is not going to like this, because usually when our encounters happen, when we're out camping, it's well into the, you know, later on the next day or whatever, not right away. And I go, she's not even here yet. And I'm already having them. And so I was like, I put my hands up through the sunroof and I said, okay, you two. I says, I'm out of here. You can have your area back. And I started my car up and then I pulled up into the main road and I drove out of there and I waved at him as I left and then got back into cell range, told my wife what was going on. And I said, I'll let you know what's going on once I find a new camping spot.
That's funny. So as far as evidence that you've have you collected anything yourself?
I've collected hair. I've done a couple of castings. I did have some audio, but you know, once this is for another show, cause I know we're running short here. I had a hair episode that I collected while I was working and I had to return it. Because I was told that he wanted it back, that he didn't want to be known. And so when I returned it, I was told by the medicine man that if you continue down this path of hunting, collecting, pursuing, and you return the hair, then who knows what's going to happen to you. You've got to change your ways. And so that's when I changed my ways from collecting and then trying to, you know, keep everything for myself, of everything that I do out there, and letting them be who they are out there in the woods.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. Do you have anything you'd like to talk about, promote, your social media or anything like that?
Oh, I don't have any social media. I come out from under my rock for invites like this, and then I go back underneath my rock until we go camping, and then I have more stories I find while my wife and I are out camping. But you can find me on Facebook. Just type in Mel Skahan, and I have a few things on there.
We're definitely going to have you on again, because you've got some great stories. I'd love to hear some more. And thanks for coming on.
Oh, well, thank you.
Support for KXRW Vancouver comes from On Point Removal Services. On Point Removal Services is a Vancouver, Washington-based junk removal service that proudly serves all of the Clark County area and beyond. Offering residential, office, and construction junk removal, On Point will do all of the loading, pickup, hauling, and cleanup on your project. And On Point is fully licensed and insured. For more information, visit their website at onpoint-removal.com.
You better work.
Discover our city's hidden gem, hiding right below the sidewalk. Underbar is a speakeasy-themed cocktail lounge located downtown Vancouver. As an LGBTQ-friendly and gay-owned space, it is a go-to destination for weekly events such as comedy, trivia, bingo, and open mic nights. Local artists are featured every first Friday of the month, and every fourth Sunday is Underbar's Underground Drag Brunch Show, 2 to 4 p.m. More information and location can be found at underbarvancouver.com. That's underbarvancouver.com.
This is Your Health Kit, practical hints and tips to improve your health and answer your medical questions, and might undo a few medical myths along the way. From KXRW and X-Ray FM, I'm Rebecca Hoffman, MD, your friendly neighborhood family doctor based in Vancouver, Washington. In today's talk, we'll take a look at monkeypox. What is it? Where did it come from? And what can we do about it? Monkeypox is a virus, and until recently, it was rare. Pox viruses can cause skin rashes, and some can be transferred between animals and humans. It does not come from monkeys. It was named by scientists who discovered it in research monkeys decades ago. Monkeypox is mostly a disease of rodents and endemic to Central and West Africa. Monkeypox is not related to chickenpox. Instead, it is more closely related to smallpox. Smallpox is a much more deadly disease, killing about 30% of those infected by it. Smallpox was eradicated by a worldwide vaccination program ending in 1972. Interestingly, if you were vaccinated in those days, you have protection against monkeypox. Monkeypox causes mild symptoms like fever, headaches, swollen lymph nodes, muscle aches, and fatigue. The rash it can cause typically appears on the extremities and face, but can also affect the eyes, mouth, and genitals. Spots appear flat at first, then become raised, filled with fluid, then pus, and finally crust over and fall off. Monkeypox can be severe sometimes, but it is rarely fatal. Monkeypox is spread by skin-to-skin contact with an infected person or animal, or by saliva, respiratory droplets, or contaminated clothing or bedding. It is not considered to be sexually transmitted at this time, though intimate contact increases risk of transmission. People at risk are household members of infected patients, people at crowded gatherings that may present a higher risk of contact, such as group homes, shelters, dorms, jails, even festivals, concerts, parties, clubs, and the like. Symptoms usually appear within 5 days of exposure, but this can be delayed by 3 weeks. Because of this delay, the World Health Organization recommends exposed people self-isolate for 3 weeks after exposure while awaiting test results. So, testing. The tests are done on the skin pustules, not with blood or urine. Testing is done at the doctor's office. There are no home tests for it. How do you protect yourself? As with so many illnesses, regular hand washing offers a lot of protection. Avoid touching or handling utensils, clothing, or bedding of a known infected person. Wear gloves and mask to remove waste, then clean laundry and wipe down hard surfaces. Save vacuuming furniture and floors for last to avoid spreading any vaccine particles. If you are having symptoms or have tested positive, the World Health Organization recommends that you isolate in your room and, if possible, use a designated bathroom away from other household members. Use separate eating utensils, towels, and electronics. Do your own laundry. Open your windows whenever possible for good ventilation. As for treatments, this is done with vaccines. No medications are approved yet. Chickenpox vaccines offer no protection from monkeypox. If you don't have a smallpox vaccine scar, it's recommended to get the smallpox vaccine within 4 to 14 days after exposure. Right now, these vaccines are highly regulated until supply increases. They're reserved for the most vulnerable, such as the immune compromised. Do remember, though, monkeypox is usually limited and runs its course in 2 to 4 weeks without any treatment at all. If you have symptoms of monkeypox, you should talk to your doctor, even if you're not sure you've been exposed. Wash your hands, disinfect your home and laundry, and consider self-isolation until you have that conversation. And that's your health kit tip for today. Monkeypox is a rare, mostly mild, short-lasting disease, and there are steps you can take to protect yourself. Remember, if you have questions about your health, check with your doctor, not a computer search engine. After all, your doctor cares about you and your health. From KXRW and X-Ray FM, I'm Dr. Hoffman. See you next time.